Let's go to our Monday experts who measures electromagnetic fields for a living. That might sound a bit obscure, but actually it's pretty timely. Because part of an electromagnetic field is the 5G network. Now, it's a bit of a hard concept to wrap your head around. And we've had loads of questions about 5G, particularly since last week when we ran a story about conspiracy theories around the 5G network. So we've invited Martin Gledhill, who's Director of EMF Services, in for a chat about 5G. He's based in Christchurch and he joins me now. Hi, Martin.
Yeah, hi, Jesse. How's things?
Great. Nice to talk to you. Tell me about your job.
Yeah, it's a bit of an oddball job, as you said. So a lot of what I do is go out and measure electromagnetic fields from various sources. It could be radio transmitters or some industrial equipment. Then I keep in touch with the health effects research that's going on in this area and usually put the results of the measurements into the context of what the health research says and what the exposure limits based on that health research have been set at.
What is an electromagnetic field? What is it that you're measuring?
Yeah, it's sort of tricky concept because you can't actually see it. You just have to kind of build up a picture in your mind about it. I guess most people would be familiar with sort of experiment you might do at school where you put a magnet down and you sprinkle iron filings around it and they take up a pattern around the magnet. And we explain that by saying that the magnet is surrounded by a magnetic field. It creates the magnetic field, which attracts things made of iron. And the pattern shows where the field is strongest and where it's weakest. And in the same way, if you pass sort of a very high frequency current through a radio aerial, it also produces magnetic fields and electric fields in such a way that they actually radiate away from that antenna. And we use that in things like radio and TV broadcasting to sort of convey information from one place to another.
Is it true that electromagnetic fields have been identified by the WHO as potentially carcinogenic? That's something we often hear.
Yeah, the WHO has a program through the International Agency for Research on Cancer, amongst other things, they do what they call a hazard identification process. And they will assemble a team of people in the various disciplines necessary to look at all the range of research that's been done. And go through it all and try and build up a picture of what that research is telling us. Because you never usually get a simple yes-no answer out of a lot of the work that's been done. And they have a four-step classification scheme, which varies from class one, where they think, yep, this definitely is carcinogenic. And that includes things like ultraviolet, say, from the sun or from a tanning bed. It includes things like processed meat, diesel exhaust. Then you get 2A, where they find the evidence isn't as clear cut. And so they say, well, that's a probable carcinogen. Then you get 2B, where it's getting even less clear cut as to whether there's a hazard there or not, and they call that a possible. And that's where they put radio frequency fields in 2011, and they said, you know, well, there's some studies suggest there might be something there suggestive of a problem, but on the other hand, we recognise that what appears to be kind of a positive link could actually be due to just biases in the data or the way the study was carried out or just a chance finding. So we're not really sure.
At this point, we should talk about 5G. We've just been talking in general about electromagnetic fields, but what is 5G exactly?
Yeah, 5G, it's like a souped-up version of 4G. It's trying to do the same thing, but a lot faster, so you can transmit the information faster than you can with 4G or 3G before that. And yeah, there's a few other sort of things that go on in the background as well, but for the user, that's probably the thing they'll notice the most.
A more powerful version of 4G?
In terms of the transmitter, no. It's just they're using sort of more recent technology that allows them to, sort of, if you like, encode more information for the same amount of power.
If 5G was bad for your health, would 4G be bad in the same way, or is there something different about 5G that should have us asking extra questions?
No, not really. I mean, in many respects, the way sort of the 5G signal is created is actually quite similar to 4G, and it's more similar to 4G than, say, 4G was to 3G. And yeah, ultimately, they're all just radio signals, and you could apply the same question not just to the various G's of cell phone technology, but also to radio transmissions, TV transmissions. And to date, at the exposure limits we use at the moment, we don't have good reason to believe that it causes harmful effects.
So they're the same sorts of waves. The waves that 5G creates are the same as the RNZ National Transmitter and Te Tahi Bay might create.
Yeah. It's all radio. The difference is the way you... Oh, the main difference is the way you encode the information onto the radio signal, and the way it's done in 5G, it's in a way that allows you to sort of get more on, more bang for your buck, if you like. And there's a few other differences with 4G, but in terms of the sort of the radio part, that's really the key.
Can I get your thoughts on a study? I'm sort of jumping around a bit here, but I want to make sure we get to the stuff that people are most likely to raise as objections to 5G. So, do you know about this toxicology report released in 2018 by the US Department of Health and pointed to by those expressing, I'm reading from the BBC website, and pointed to by those expressing safety concerns that found that male rats exposed to high doses of radio frequency radiation of the type you're discussing developed a type of cancerous tumour in the heart?
Yeah. No, that was the National Toxicology Program study, which was carried out over great many years. It was a good study. They used large numbers of animals, and they had a good system for exposing them. But those studies are mostly used as a screening tool to look for things that perhaps could be examined in more depth afterwards. And it also has to be seen in the context of other animal studies that have been done before. And there's been at least 50 of those. And when they were reviewed by Health Council of the Netherlands a few years ago, the Health Council concluded that they didn't really think it supported a link between the exposures and any development of cancer. So it had its strong points, but the exposures were certainly far higher than people would get either from using a phone or sort of in the environment. In fact, they were way, way above what you would ever get in the environment. And there's been, it has other weaknesses too. I mean, one of the problems with it was they had a set of animals that they exposed to the radio signal and a set of animals that were treated exactly the same way, but they weren't exposed. And sort of unusually, the unexposed animals tended to die a lot sooner than the ones that were exposed. Now, that's not a reason for saying, gee, the exposure must have been good for them. but it makes it difficult to actually make the comparison between what happens with the exposure compared with no exposure. And the pattern of cancer development wasn't really what you'd expect if you were, yeah, if there really was some cause and effect relationship there. The type of tumour that developed in the heart, you would have expected to see it develop in other parts of the animals as well, and that didn't happen. And the other factor that the NTP usually look at is to see, they test two different species to see whether you get the same effects in both species. And they'd also exposed mice, and there was no effect on the mice. So it's another data point. It's a good data point, but it's not the be all and end all. And the NTP were careful to say, well, you can't just take these results and extrapolate them to sort of the human experience. And yeah, other US agencies like the Food and Drug Administration haven't changed their recommendations on the basis of that study.
Often people who have questions about 5G are portrayed as conspiracy crackpots. And that's fine. However, there are people who are clearly not conspiracy theorists who nonetheless have questions. I read about a letter that had been signed by, what was it, 230 scientists calling, I'm sorry, I can't find it in front of me at the moment, but calling for more questions to be asked about 5G and for a bit of restraint in the rollout. What should we make of that?
I know the one you mean. I think there's been a few of those. I mean, it's not unusual for that thing to happen. I mean, if you look back at 9/11, you'll find that there were, large groups of engineers and architects who said, oh, look, there must have been a controlled explosion to bring the building down. It couldn't possibly have happened. And there's been similar appeals about climate change from a group of people who call themselves meteorologists who say, it's not real, it's not happening, and it's not man-made. Any appeal like that has to be judged on the basis of the evidence that supports it. And if you want to sort of make a case that something is harmful or not, you have to do a careful review of the research. I mean, if I was to appear in a New Zealand court, for example, as an expert witness, I couldn't just summarise the information supporting one argument or another. I would have to give all the information and then explain why I thought one side was better. And what you tend to find with those appeals is they tend to be a bit selective in the information they use to support them. Whereas if you look at health bodies that have done a more complete assessment, and these happen as usually 1, 2, or 3 every year from bodies like Health Council of the Netherlands, and there's a group in Switzerland, European Union, and they look at sort of all the research that's been done, and they assess it for the quality, whether they followed good laboratory practice, and they try and sort of unravel why you might get contradictory findings. And those bodies all find that, again, with the exposure limits we have at the moment, there's no good suggestion of any health effects happening. And if that's the case for the systems we use now, then 5G, it's just another radio signal, so it's not a reason not to use 5G.
Do you understand people's reticence to take the word of a technology company that seeks to benefit from technology to reassure people that the technology is safe and healthy, particularly when you look at some of the things that have happened you know, through the last sort of few decades, where they've got it, where corporates have got it wrong. Do you understand? In fact, would you encourage people to be sceptical of health claims made by companies about products that they are installing?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, if people are trying to sort of say, well, what do I trust? That's certainly one of the questions they should ask. And they should also ask, you know, well, how well did they do the research? You know, what other motivations might they have? But in practice, you know, I don't think that the technology companies themselves and the people who develop the equipment, they really seem to have pulled out of doing any research. I mean, at one time, Motorola had a big research lab, and that's long since gone. And if you look at where all the funding is coming from, a lot of it is sponsored by governments or by sort of multinational organisations like the EU. And if there is industry money going in, it's always, you know, they put in what they call a firewall to separate the source of funding from the people who actually do the research, and ensure that the people doing the research can do it as they think it should best be done and are free to report the findings as they come out.
Has there been enough research on 5G, given that it's a new technology?
Oh, the thing with research is it always seems to go that once you answer one question, you raise two more, and there's always going to be more questions to answer. I'm sure research will be done which uses 5G rather than, you know, the current types of radio signal that have been used. But, you know, based on everything we've seen so far, there's no reason to suspect that it's going to throw us a curveball.
Someone's forwarded me a link to a blog post on the Scientific American. I think Scientific American is a fairly legit site, and I just want to read this to you because it's right in your area of expertise. It says, the latest cellular, the headline is, we have no reason to believe 5G is safe. And the paragraph I'm reading to you says, the latest cellular technology, 5G, will employ millimeter waves for the first time, in addition to microwaves that have been used for older cellular technologies, 2G through 4G. Given its limited reach, 5G will require cell antennas every 100 to 200 metres, exposing many people to millimetre wave radiation. And that rings a bell with something a couple of the protesters were saying about there being repeaters or something similar on lampposts. Just to conclude, 5G also employs new technology. For example, active antennas capable of beam-forming phased arrays, massive of multiple inputs and outputs, known as massive MIMO, which pose unique challenges for measuring exposures.
Yep. Now, there was actually a response to that that piece in the following Scientific American, which you know, people can look up on the website. I mean, 5G, one of the things that will happen in the future is it will use frequencies which are quite a bit different to what's used by cellular technology at the moment. But their frequencies have been used by point-to-point radio communication links for several decades now, so they're not new, and the work has been done at those frequencies as well. So it's actually not such a novelty. One of the other points that was mentioned was about the beam-forming antennas. These are actually used a little bit with 4G at the moment, but the idea is that most of the antennas used for cell phone communication now, they transmit a fixed pattern of radio waves away from the antenna, whereas what's being proposed for 5G as it sort of develops is that instead of sort of transmitting to everybody in the area, it will actually transmit selectively towards the users. And so people who are not using the 5G, their exposures will probably go down.
A few people asking about bugs and bees. Any evidence that 5G might kill or otherwise disorientate bees?
The research on, particularly on bees, there's not very much, and it doesn't suggest anything at the moment. There's been work that says, well, once you get into the higher frequencies, maybe they will absorb sort of more of the power from the radio signal, but that's only likely to be in effect very, very close to the antenna. And I think one thing to bear in mind is that the bugs and the bees tend to be out in the countryside, whereas the antennas tend to be in cities where you don't find the bugs and the bees as much. And just to come back on the closely spaced transmitters, this could happen, say, in city centres. If they start to use the higher frequencies, they don't travel as well. So what we might see is more transmitters, but much lower powered because they're trying to cover a shorter distance.
The implication being that because they are low power, they wouldn't pose any extra danger.
I mean, one of the things that I've seen mentioned quite a lot is that 5G is going to cause a huge increase in the sort of the everyday exposure to radio waves. And yeah, the measurements I've done and what I've seen done in Australia and in the UK just doesn't support that. It's really making very little difference.
We've got a minute or so left. As I say, I've jumped around a bit. Is there anything that you wanted to cover that we haven't got to?
People are naturally sceptical about new technology. And that's, I think that's well deserved. In this case, I think you've got to not take everything that you read on the internet at face value, but start asking a few questions about it. Where does it come from? Are people trying to give me information, or are they trying to sway me emotionally? Apply a few common sense arguments. I mean, if it really is a problem, then we've had 5G in Australia for 2 years now. There's no evidence that it's having any effects there. And I think have a bit of a bit more trust in the people who are doing the work, that they are competent and not a bunch of bought off hacks.
Just a few seconds to answer this one, but it's probably an important one. Why do we even need it? Things are downloading pretty fast as it is.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough too. And I think part of the answer is it's just to increase capacity, because people are using their mobile data more and more. And because of that, the 4G is going to run out of capacity to meet the need, and 5G will open up a lot more capacity to meet people's demand.
All right. Martin Gledhill from EMF Services. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.